If you felt stuck trying to lose weight, you're not alone. Enter Weight Loss by Hers. It's designed to support you in reaching your goals. And Hers now offers access to an affordable range of FDA-approved GLP-1 medications, including the Wegovy pill and the Wegovy pen. With Wegovy at Hers, lose up to 20% or more of your body weight when combined with diet and exercise. It helps you regulate your appetite, eat less, and keep weight off. Plus, Wegovy is the first GLP-1 available in a pill, so there are no needles needed. Everything is 100% online through Hers. You'll connect with a licensed provider who will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your medication is delivered right to your door, no insurance necessary. And it doesn't stop there. Weight Loss by Hers goes beyond medication by offering access to 24/7 messaging with your care team and tons of in-app lifestyle and nutrition tips like recipes, meal plans, fitness videos, sleep content, and more. Even better, with a range of affordable GLP-1 options, Hers makes it simple to find an approach that fits your needs and your budget, if eligible. You'll get a treatment plan personalized to you and unlimited dosage changes as needed. It's weight loss designed to work with your life. Ready to reach your goals? Visit forhers.com/women to get personalized, affordable care that gets you. That's forhers.com/women. forhers.com/women. Weight loss by Hers is not available in all 50 states. Wegovy is the registered trademark of Novo Nordisk AS. To get started and learn more, including important safety information, Wegovy clinical study information, and restrictions, visit forhers.com.
Welcome back to Gabbing with Gib. I'm your host, Gibson Johns, and today we are talking about The Valley, we're talking about Summer House, we're talking about Kenya Moore's YouTube confessional, and what that was all about. We're talking about Mia Thornton leaving The Real Housewives of Potomac. We're talking about Sutton's latest comments about Garcelle. And then I also have a very, very, very quick little joint interview with Stassi Schroeder and Lisa Vanderpump, which was part of the Vanderpump Villa season 2 press junket last week. So let's get into it. So I think for the Valley premiere, obviously I talked about the Gabbing with Gib cameo in one of last week's episodes, but I didn't really get into the actual premiere. And I feel like the best way to do that would be to maybe go couple by couple. So, you know, taking center stage from the start on the show were Jax and Brittany. And I think that's going to continue very much so in the second season. And I mean, we're starting off with like, I was going to say we're starting off with a bang, but that would be like really bad word choice because we find out this story kind of right away. We hear it both from Brittany's perspective and Jax's perspective, where Jax finds out that Brittany, you know, Jax and Brittany were separated and they were allowed to hook up with other people. But it's the classic thing in this group of like, okay, but then when you're allowed to hook up with other people, why do you choose a friend of mine? And Brittany chose a friend of his. And it sounds like this guy was like kind of a grifter. They were talking a lot about it in the after show, which if you're not watching The Valley after show, which you know it's going to be good when we're getting after show after the first episode of the season. The after show is 37 minutes long, so there's a lot of content there. And I didn't take notes during the first one, so I'll make sure to do that going forward. But I remember in the after show, they were talking a lot about how this guy was like kind of a grifter. Like he let everybody always pay for him for things. I think he has a baby mama or two. Like there's a lot going on with this guy. But anyway, he is apparently good friends with this crew. He's in this cursed boys chat they keep on bringing up. Apparently the boys chat has 22 people in it. I mean, I can just imagine the dark shit they talk about in this group, and it keeps on being brought up. It was brought up last season too. Anyway, he's in this group, and of course, it sounds like Jax is sort of making it seem like that they were closer friends than they actually were. They weren't like best friends, even though he kind of makes it sound that way. The other guys are kind of like, eh, like they were in the same friend group kind of thing. Well, anyway, Brittany chose to start hooking up with him, and that's what Jax takes offense to. He's like, why of all people are you choosing a friend of mine? And we find out that then maybe Jax and Brittany, I think Brittany calls it a moment of weakness at one point. She clearly still like hooks up with Jax, like again, whether that's one time or they start having sex again regularly, I'm not sure. But they sleep together again. And I think in Jax's mind, that's like, oh, we're like maybe getting back together. Like we're not hooking up with other people again. But then he finds Brittany's naughty texts with this guy. And she sent him a sexy photo. And he is irate and he is so mad that he flips a coffee table at their house and it hits Brittany and bruises her leg. So now we're getting into physical abuse territory. This is beyond this is beyond. And this is kind of a trend with everything he was saying this premiere, is like, he acknowledged that he behaved badly. He acknowledged his mistakes. He acknowledges he fucks up, but then he qualifies it. He says, sorry, but, and he's like, you know, I was fucked up, but what about, but Britney's also said fucked up things to me, but Britney's also being a hypocrite, but Britney also yells. And it's like, okay, well, none of that is going to stack up to what you do and how you've been. I'm sorry. Nothing that Jack says about Britney will make me think that she is as bad as him. And you basically threw a coffee table at your estranged wife. And he says, but show me a man that wouldn't react that way to finding out this information. I mean, I could show you a million men that wouldn't physically abuse their technically wife after they find out information like this. So yeah, I'm fucking over Jax, and like, it's hard to even call him good TV, but he's compelling television, I guess. And he's so maddening that like, you have to watch him. But I'm so glad that Britney's getting his ass. And it feels like the whole time watching this season, it's going to feel like Britney from that one scene on Vanderpump Rules back in the day where she tells him to rot in hell. That's going to be this whole season about Jax. Not that it wasn't last season either, but it's going to be even more so. I mean, she is going after him. She's going for custody. She's going for a restraining order. And yeah, it's going to be bad for him. And you know what? I'm glad she fucked his friend. And I'm with Kristen when she said on the after show that if Jax had a brother, she would have fucked him. Britney should fuck him too. You know, like, Britney should just take him the fuck down, because he is such a monster to me. He's like probably the worst person on Bravo, in my opinion. And this is a funny detail to me, though. She said that when Jax was on the Hot Mic podcast, which is Alex Baskin, the executive producer of the show, he also does Orange County and Beverly Hills. He has the Hot Mic podcast, which is Bravo's official podcast. And Jax has been on there twice, actually. And she said that she took note of 31 times that he lied in one episode of that podcast. So she's taken note. She's taken names. I'm proud of her for doing so. But I think it's going to be pretty dark this season between them. Very much so. And that's not a leap to say, of course. Then we have Michelle and Jesse, who are fully both dating other people. They're fully getting divorced and separated. This is going to get toxic too. I don't think it's going to get into the physical abuse territory like Britney and Jax already has 5 minutes into the season. But we know that Jesse accuses Michelle of prostitution, of like being basically a high class call girl. She accuses him of being a drunk, and they get into at least one screaming match. So it's going to get dark between them too. But yeah, I mean, in this episode, Jesse, he looks good. He definitely looks better than last season. And he is dating somebody new. I mean, he's definitely still sort of like a scary, intense dude. And I don't like the way that he talks to women. And his whole thing right now, his sort of like whole crusade, is that if it turns out that the guy that Michelle is with now is the guy that she was with that helped break up their marriage, then it's not going to be good for them. And he has this whole sit down with Kristen where they talk about that moment from last season where she's in the hallway of the hotel being kind of like dragged out. And she was like saying that Michelle had a boyfriend for 3 years. And, you know, they like shut her down and said she was lying. And he basically was like, you were right. Like, he like validates her claim. And she's like, you know what? I'm always right. Like, she says something along those lines, which is like, I think very funny, because I think it's funny that we're like all of a sudden treating Kristen Doty as like the beacon of truth and virtue. But you know what? She was very much right in this situation. And it was pleasing to see her get that validation, for sure. But it's just funny to me that like, just because she was right in this instant that, anyway. So again, he's dating somebody new. And at Britney's white party, which I guess Jax was supposed to have like a competing event for, but it just ended up being him and Schwartz having a sad little conversation at Jax's in the Valley. But anyway, so at this party, Jesse brings up, you know, now that he's dating somebody in Newport, like maybe he would consider putting their daughter in school in Orange County. And Michelle was like, over my fucking dead body that you're going to take my daughter away from me 5 days a week just to put her in school where your new woman is. Like, no. And I actually kind of believe Jesse when he admitted that he was just doing that to get a ride out of Michelle, and he wasn't actually serious. But also, that's still a fucked up thing to hang over your, again, estranged ex. You know, again, not to give Jesse too much credit. He doesn't seem like a good guy that we've seen from this show. But I will say, he was giving Jax some good, tough love in this episode. And again, I don't think there's hope for Jax to really change in a big way. But he was giving Jax some good, tough love in that conversation, and not to give him too much credit, but I'm pointing that out because it's clearly hard to get through to Jax. And I'm so curious which of the men are really going to be able to do that. And I feel like it's going to be Jesse and Tom Schwartz this season that are able to get through to Jax about his bad behavior. Then we have Kristen and Luke, and there's nothing much to report from this first episode about them. They're trying to get pregnant and they're going off about Janet, obviously. Then we have Janet and Jason, and again, nothing much to report about their relationship. They're definitely the most stable of the bunch, sort of as a unit, as a couple, I would say, at this point, from what we've seen on the show. But we do know later on that Kristen will accuse Jason of taking his wedding ring off sometimes when he goes out. So definitely we can buckle up for more drama between Janet and Jason, probably brought on by Kristen. And then speaking of Kristen and Janet, so obviously... My podcast, my interview with Janet from last year, plays into what's going on between them. And I feel two ways about it. On the one hand, obviously, it's a big thing to bring up. It's a big accusation that Janet made that Kristen and Zach both kind of wished harm on her unborn child and didn't want her to go full term, which is, again, a very dark accusation. And I think where Janet fucked up here is that she really roped Kristen into it and implied that she also said this, when it sounds like in actuality, it was just Zach. And I do believe that he said some fucked up shit about Janet. And we obviously saw in the season one finale, he was disregarding the risks to her pregnancy from last season's finale. And I think there is more to the claim of what he said about her in that regard. But also, so Sheena, who is going to be on the Valley this season, she said on her podcast last week that Janet, who has been open about this, so Sheena didn't reveal this. She also said she got permission from Janet to like bring this up again. But she was talking about Janet's mental health and trigger warning suicide, that Janet at one point was suicidal. And, you know, their close inner circle knew about this. And Zach said to Brittany that she should have killed herself when she had the chance. This is what Sheena said on her podcast. And Brittany brought this to Janet because she was so disturbed by Zach's words and what and his claims and his wishes for Janet. And not only did she bring it to Janet, but she felt so strongly about it that she distanced herself from Zach for months and months and months. And to me, it's like, Brittany's not going to do that if what Zach said was not really, really fucked up. And there wasn't some truth to what Sheena and Janet are claiming. Because what I'm noticing with viewers is that, like, I think people are sort of blinded by their dislike of Janet and perhaps of Sheena and sort of their adoration of Kristen as this like reality star queen, which she very much is. She is a legend of reality TV and Bravo. But I think that people are sort of blinded by that, both their dislike of Janet and Sheena and also their high regard of Kristen and this big comeback via the Valley, to see clearly on this. And that's just my opinion on the situation. And it seems like people just aren't believing what Janet's saying. And clearly, again, Janet has done things to make herself unlikable to many people outside of this specific Kristen situation, but also within this Kristen situation. But I do believe her on this and when it comes to Zach. And I know that puts me in the minority judging by social media. And I'm sure that it is impacted by the fact that I interviewed Janet and this claim came from my podcast. But that's how I'm naturally feeling about it. So it is what it is, I guess. Like I don't know if I can fully disregard that, you know? But I think it's telling that Brittany distanced herself from Zach, who is her best friend from college, who she brought to this group. So like, she's the one that's closest with him historically. So for her to distance herself from him, I think is very telling. And again, should Janet have looped Kristen in when she spoke about it on my podcast? No, because it doesn't sound like Kristen actually said that. But I think that Janet views it as like Kristen standing by Zach as her sort of endorsing and believing him, and or either endorsing his comments or believing him and not believing her. It's very complicated. It's, again, very dark. But I do believe Janet's claims about Zach. But again, I don't think she should have looped Kristen into it. And again, this is going to continue all season long. So I think we should just buckle up for this. Yeah. And then last couple is Nia and Danny. And again, nothing much to report from this first episode, but a couple things. One is we know from the trailer that he gets accused of being handsy when he's drunk. And also remember, last season on their trip, he also spoke very strongly to her when he was drunk. So I feel like the drinking thing is maybe a through line with the Danny of it all as it pertains to Nia. So yeah, they're going to definitely have some drama over that this season. And also in the after show, I was like, damn, like I did not realize that Nia, who was paired with Kristen on the after show, is so like, that there's such a divide between Nia and Janet and that crew. Like Like, it's, I just didn't realize that, I guess. But then when I rewatched the trailer, you see that Janet helps to sort of proliferate the rumor that Danny gets handsy. So I think that probably explains that in a big way. And then I'm also just glad generally about this season of the Valley that it sounds like we're going to get more of Zach. We're going to get more of Jasmine and her relationship, because they were sort of relegated to being side characters last season. I think that fans really like them. And I think it's good that production will lean into giving them a little bit more airtime and to sort of round out how they are portrayed on the show. But yeah, again, the after show is great, and it definitely colors in a lot of the lines. There's a lot more context from that. Lala's on there, Sheena's on there, Brock's on there, Thomas Schwartz is on there. So it's really a packed house. But again, I have no problem with the Pump Rules crew carrying over to the Valley, because it seems very organic. They are authentically part of this friend group. They have been for a while. So I think for people to be complaining that they're part of this show is like, I mean, again, argue with the wall. Like, I just think it makes sense. So why would you not bring in these seasoned reality stars, even if they're not full cast members taking up all the airtime? But they definitely, like in the after show, they're all adding a lot of good tea to these stories. And I think that alone makes it worthwhile for them to be here.
Feeling sluggish from all the extra food, drinks, and celebrations? Kick off the new year with a science-backed reset. Quiksilver Scientific's PushCatch Liver Detox is a patented, simple two-step system that supports your liver, gut, and whole body detoxification, helping clear out what's slowing you down so you feel energized for the year ahead. It's more than a cleanse. Quiksilver Scientific's PushCatch Liver Detox helps reset your system. Get 10% off and free shipping at tryqs.com/podcast. Again, that's tryqs.com/podcast for 10% off and free shipping. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
If you felt stuck trying to lose weight, you're not alone. Enter Weight Loss by Hers. It's designed to support you in reaching your goals. And Hers now offers access to an affordable range of FDA-approved GLP-1 medications, including the Wegovy pill and the Wegovy pen. With Wegovy at Hers, lose up to 20% or more of your body weight when combined with diet and exercise. It helps you regulate your appetite, eat less, and keep weight off. Plus, Wegovy is the first GLP-1 available in a pill, so there are no needles needed. Everything is 100% online through Hers. You'll connect with a licensed provider who will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your medication is delivered right to your door. No insurance necessary. And it doesn't stop there. Weight Loss by Hers goes beyond medication by offering access to 24/7 messaging with your care team and tons of in-app lifestyle and nutrition tips like recipes, meal plans, fitness videos, sleep content, and more. Even better, with a range of affordable GLP-1 options, Hers makes it simple to find an approach that fits your needs and your budget, if eligible. You'll get a treatment plan personalized to you and unlimited dosage changes as needed. It's weight loss designed to work with your life. Ready to reach your goals? Visit forhers.com/women to get personalized, affordable care that gets you. That's forhers.com/women. forhers.com/women. Weight Loss by Hers is not available in all 50 states. Wegovy is the registered trademark of Novo Nordisk AS. To get started and learn more, including important safety information, Wegovy clinical study information, and restrictions, visit forhers.com.
Sierra has all the best active and outdoor brands you need, from athletic stuff, like a full-court pickup game, swish, to athletic-ish stuff, like a half-mile stroll. Get those steps in! And for morning hikes up the mountain trail, good pace. To nighttime ghost stories from the camping chair. What a twist. Whatever level of active, Sierra loves it all. Head to Sierra or Sierra.com for the brands you want at the prices that let you do it all. From athletic to athletic-ish, Sierra's got it.
All right, let's get into Summer House. I want to talk about Imrul, Lexi and Jesse, and then Paige and Sierra. So let's talk about the Imrul of it all. So this episode, we saw him bring yet another woman home who we don't see her face. She comes home late at night. He covers the cameras. We hear a little bit of audio. She leaves before dawn, and that's that. He walks around the house in his underwear, making it just sort of like, it's like clockwork. And Jesse said on the Two Chicks in the Office podcast, I didn't listen to the full thing, but I saw a clip, that Imrul is actually getting a positive edit, which is saying something, because I don't think that it's being taken very positively, at least by myself, and I think a lot of people online. But on the flip side, I have noticed that when people criticize his hooking up all the time and his all of his one night stands and his, you know, group, all the group sex he's having and all that kind of stuff, there's a group of people that the criticism of that doesn't sit right with them, or, you know, that's what the show is all about, the meaningless hookups. And it's like, I don't think that's actually what the show has ever been fully about. Yeah, it's about partying and hooking up and stuff, but it's about all of that in relation to the people that you're living with. And I think that's where the problem lies for me. It's like, I would have no problem if Imrul was like hooking up with a bunch of chicks all summer, but he also was like striking up really meaningful friendships with the rest of the house, or he was involved in other storylines, or it looked like he was really kind of, you know, pitching in around the house. Like, we get no clue. We get no evidence that he's doing any of that. So his only storyline literally is these women who he keeps bringing in every single weekend. And yeah, we've heard about his backstory and stuff like that, which I think is great. And it's, I mean, he definitely has a difficult backstory, and he was an undocumented immigrant for I think several years, I want to say. And I don't know that perspective, so I can't say whether or not him using that to explain the reason why he hooks up with a bunch of people as like sort of the reasoning for that. I can't speak to whether that's valid or not, to be honest. But I don't know. I think that's the problem. Like, the problem is his seeming lack of connection with the rest of the house. It feels like he's treating the house as just as a place to crash and hook up with girls in the Hamptons and then go back in the city, and doesn't want to meaningfully engage with anybody else for any other reason other than partying. And again, that's not what the house is about. That's never been what Summer House is about. It's about a friend group that goes out to the Hamptons and then does these things and talks about it the next day. And it just feels like that's off with him. And you know that. So like, I would do the same if I was Paige. If some chick was fake moaning for the whole house to hear at 5 a.m., I'd also be pissed the next morning. And also we hear in the little audio of their hookup that she asks him, can I make noise? And he's like, yeah, go for it. Let it fly. And it's like, see, that's a bad housemate. He knows that there are 10 other people sleeping in the house, and he tells her to make as much noise as possible. That encapsulates part of the issue. It's just like disrespectful. He's not thinking about anybody else but himself. And I will say though, Paige, she was obviously on edge because of the Craig stuff the next morning and not sleeping and having anxiety. But like, she did not handle that well that next morning by like accusing him of telling him to get checked for STDs. I think Sierra handled it much better when she was sitting out with the boys and just kind of confronted him and just kind of spoke for herself. I think that she actually handled that moment very, very well. All right, let's talk about Jesse and Lexi. So we saw in this episode, they're coming back from the day party that Kyle DJ'd, and then they all went out from there. At first, I was confused that they all changed outfits somehow for the nightclub, but it looked like when Paige and Sierra came back, they had like tote bags with them. So they clearly packed other outfits because they were all the way out in Montauk. But so we hear them faintly arguing like behind a car, trying to be away from the cameras because they had argued in the Uber, and it continued into the driveway into the house. And basically, Jesse is mad because he said that Lexi was flirting with West in a way that was like how he flirts with Sierra, how he was flirting with her when Lexi wasn't at the house. So it's not a big deal if they're both doing it, right? But also I'm like, okay, like he brings that up as an example to show her like, oh, that's what I was doing with Sierra. Like, it's not that big of a deal. But also, it's a big enough deal for him to bring up and get kind of upset over. So like, isn't Lexi kind of valid in feeling upset about that if those are the same thing? So like, which is it? Is it a big deal or is it something to be upset over? Also, it makes you think, like, let's say they were the same thing, which is, it doesn't sound like they were. Is West and Lexi sort of getting flirty and handsy at the club in front of Jesse? Is that better than Jesse getting handsy with Sierra and flirty with her without Lexi being there? Which is better, which is worse? I don't know. But it makes you think. And I just feel like Jesse can't really make up his mind about what he wants here. And also, to add sort of a level to the story, in a confessional, Jesse tells an even different kind of story. He says that West was rubbing Lexi's shoulders. Doesn't that mean that it was West who crossed the line, not Lexi? And if it was West, That's very interesting to me. And I'm not saying that I want or expect West and Jesse to have some sort of falling out or anything like that. But it is something that we've rarely seen on Bravo, having two men having a friendship fallout. That's a rare occurrence. It's happened on Vanderpump Rules. And like we've seen, you know, Austin, Craig, and Shep have stuff over the years in Southern Charm. But I feel like on Summer House, we haven't really seen that. Because Kyle and Carl, they've had their issues over the years, but they've never had like a full falling out. I don't know. That's just something to think about. Also, before I get to Lexi's interview with Glamour, when they got home from this big day of partying, Jesse tells Lexi that he loves her, and then he asks her to say it back to him. But I thought she was the one that was pushing things along. I thought she was the one that was like being crazy obsessed with him and forcing him to do X, Y, Z and be super serious. But now we're seeing that it's him. When he's drunk, he's saying these things of like, he's telling her he loves her. He's asking her to say that back to him. And we find out in a confessional from her that he said it first to her 11 days into their relationship. So again, I just feel like, and I'm about to get into Lexi's interview for Glamour, where she talks a lot about this, but it just sounds like he was saying one thing to her and being super affectionate and interested and pushing things along very quickly. But then he would turn around and represent things very differently to the house and in confessionals. And I think now in these drunken moments where they come home from partying all day, you know, drunk words are sober thoughts. And I think this is what he was doing the whole time off camera. And he just sort of gets caught being a little looser when he's drunk. Okay, so let's get into this Lexi interview. Shout out to Stephanie McNeil at Glamour for doing this Q&A with Lexi this past week. So it's interesting because Paige also got a Glamour interview, which is really great. I recommend reading that. She talks a lot about the Craig stuff. Jesse did this Two Chicks in an Office. So there's a lot of Carl and Kyle did an interview recently. There are a lot of sort of pre-reunion end of season interviews happening, which are definitely part of the sort of the each individual cast member sort of efforts to both put their narrative out there, get things out there ahead of the reunion, but also ahead of the finale and the end of season when contract negotiations start, when decisions are made of you know, who to bring back to the show and who not to bring back to the show. You know, seeing a lot of these interviews pop up towards the end of the season is partially a strategic thing, and it happens almost every year. And so so Lexi does this interview with Glamour, and she calls her situationship with Jesse the worst relationship I've ever been in. She says, "It's really disappointing. It's really disheartening to see someone I was really being so pure with could make it so sour. I definitely feel now looking back that I was very isolated." So part of Lexi's sort of narrative is like Jesse isolated her from the rest of the women in the house, which, and as he sort of made her feel confused about the status of their relationship, she didn't have anybody to turn to because the women had already been isolated from her because Jesse was sort of misrepresenting their relationship to them, which sort of made them weirded out by her. Does that make sense? So, which I think is partially very accurate, to be honest. And I think that Lexi sort of, she might minimize her role in this a little bit, but I think overall, like I actually kind of buy that spin. And I don't know if it's as conscious on Jesse's part that sort of he maybe manipulated the situation and misrepresented the situation. I think that's just maybe how he is and how he treats these situations, but that doesn't make it better. It just means that manipulation is manipulation, and whether that's conscious or subconscious, it doesn't really matter. But I think that she is sort of painting him to be this sort of like conscious manipulator. I was talking to my friend Molly about this, and we were saying how like we don't really buy that narrative of him being the sort of master manipulator, which I don't. But that doesn't mean that he didn't manipulate the situation. You know, adding to her isolation also is the fact that like Lexi came into the show with Bailey. She was supposed to have a built-in female best friend. And Bailey, again, was dropped from the show after allegedly lying about not having a boyfriend. She actually had a boyfriend, which impacted, you know, the role that she was supposed to play on the show, clearly. But if Bailey had been there for all of filming, Lexi could have turned directly to her and not felt so isolated. And that's exactly what West had in Jesse and West last season. So, and I've spoken at length about how, like, it's really difficult for a single person to come into the show without a partner in crime built in. And that's sort of what happened to Lexi inadvertently. And I think that definitely set her up to feel even more isolated. But she talks about, you know, she says, I think in front of my face, Jesse was very different. Behind my back, he had a lot of things that he did not communicate to me. All I saw was him moving so fast, him going for it, him texting me, calling me, wanting to hang out. We would hang out 6 days a week and he would have hung out for seven if I wasn't like, I need a break, I need to sleep for a day. We would go for dinners, we would go for walks, we would hang out, watch movies, the regular couple stuff, talk about our future. But definitely my feelings were always trying to catch up. So he would set a bar and I'd be like, okay, perfect. He's setting the bar. Let me meet him there. And I'd meet him there. And then he'd set it higher and higher. So that's exactly what I've been saying all season on my podcast. It's like, he was love bombing her. He was leading the charge. And then she was meeting him there. And then now she's being painted as the crazy attached one when he was the one that made her attached. So she's validating that theory for me. She said, I think he never said it in front of my face because then I would have corrected him. And then she was asked about the thing where she apparently asked him to like not follow all those girls on Instagram. And she said, I think he never said it in front of my face because I would have corrected him. He would say it behind my back, which in turn did make me very isolated from everybody else because obviously they hear things and they're like, what the heck? But that's not how the conversation went. The conversation was like, I still want you to be you and show your personality, but I think there's a more respectful way that you can do it than by making every girl feel like they could have you. Instead, make them feel like they're your best friend. He kept saying, oh, they're like my sisters, but they all think that you would date them. And Sierra said that she thinks that he would date her. So that's where I'm coming from. And clearly I was right because she felt like that too. And that's funny because when Lexi said that Jesse and Sierra were like sisters, everybody else in the house was like, they were not flirting like they were brother and sister, which is accurate. So they have every right to react like that. But he was the one that was telling her that they were like his sisters. So it wasn't her completely misreading the situation. It was him leading her to that label. She goes, I got so many DMs at the start of the summer like, hey, he's following all these girls. You need to watch your back. But at the time, he didn't give me any reason not to trust him until after the toe situation. I was like, you what? And then I looked and I was like, oh, he's following all these girls. They were like college girls, University of Alabama. I'm like, you don't know her. I didn't tell him to unfollow anyone. I never told him to unfollow exes. I never told him any of that. I just said, stop following college girls. If you want to date me, stop doing that. Which, like, I personally don't think that's crazy. And I do think that this is maybe one of those situations where Lexi, I totally understand her perspective on it. But I also could see maybe that's not actually how she delivered the message. You know what I mean? Like, I could see, I think both Jesse and Lexi perhaps are misrepresenting a little bit how they delivered messages to one another. But ultimately, I'm like, yeah, why does he have to follow these random University of Alabama girls? Like, what's the point if you're exclusive with this girl who's right in front of your face? And then she was asked about the girls in the house and whether that impacted her feeling isolated and her connection to them. I think I now see where the disconnect was. I definitely felt alone all summer and I was very isolated. But I think now watching back, I totally understand that they were being fed so many different stories that of course they were going to also be hesitant towards me. I really hope that now that seeing and watching that, they can see where I was coming from and I actually had no idea. And hopefully those relationships can move on to me having deeper, more solid friendships, which I think is valid. But I also kind of think at this point, I do think that the girls have more allegiance and loyalty to Jesse. They've known him for longer and they've been sort of conditioned this season to see his side of things. So I'm very curious how the reunion goes from that perspective. And this part I found very interesting from Lexi. She goes, I think the more Jesse talks, the more the camera is on him. So if he's talking to me, the camera's on him. If he's talking shit about me, the camera's on him. I know that Jesse was always talking about West getting so much attention last year. He would always be like, I didn't get that much attention. I thought he meant more career-wise. I didn't know he meant drama-wise. That is a really loaded answer to me. That is so interesting. Like, that is what they were talking about behind closed doors, off camera, talking about how much camera time West got, how much attention he got. And in some ways, you know, the attention on West was good and bad last season, right? Like, he got such good attention until it turned. And I think she said, you know, career-wise versus drama-wise, I think those actually aren't completely different things. I think if you're getting a lot of attention on the show drama wise, that in turn impacts the attention that your career gets. Like, even with Jesse this summer, it's like this season, it's like he is getting more camera time, way more than West, honestly, and he's getting more attention as such, which is better for his career. He's probably getting more brand deals, he's probably getting more listeners on his random music that he drops every Friday on Spotify. Like, that is good for his career. And I think it's very telling that she brought that up. That's really interesting to me. And the fact that he has that sort of deep feeling about the sort of star, the sort of machine that got behind West last season and made him a star. And not that Jesse didn't become a star either, but different levels for sure. And then in response to this whole interview, Jesse released a statement to Glamour and he said, "Our relationship meant a lot to me and I'm grateful for everything it taught me. Sometimes connections shift, especially in a setting like this where everything is under a microscope and conversations are happening through a game of telephone. As far as being dishonest, I really do try to be transparent. I think there were just some miscommunications and heightened emotions, which is understandable given the environment." Not no. I mean, that's valid, I guess. I think that it's pretty vague and whatever. And I think it's kind of more like, to me, that whole statement reads, all right, let's talk about it at the reunion, you know, face to face. I'm not going to play this game in the press with you, which, valid. I'd rather see it on TV anyway. So that's that. I feel like a lot of my theories about their dynamic were validated in this interview from Lexi and from what we saw on the show this week. But yes, the last thing I want to talk about with Summer House is Sierra and Paige's conversation about Craig. And to me, Paige's, and this is the one that had been teased in the trailer where Paige is in tears and she's confiding in Sierra about losing it all if she makes this big decision. And to me, it lived up one to the tease. I think it was a really great conversation. And I have to say at the top, we've seen two really intense conversations, or we've honestly seen three really intense conversations between Sierra and Paige about Craig in the past several episodes. And Sierra has been an incredible friend and sounding board to Paige. She's giving her hard truths. She's asking the right questions. She's being emotional when she needs to be. She's being hardline when she needs to be. She's being a really, really good girlfriend to Paige. And I just had to say that up top because, you know, it's really special to see some of these female friendships flourish. And I'm actually going to do an episode about how sort of Summer House has become about the girls later this week or early next week. I'm not sure. But that was just really special to me. And I think that this conversation in particular, the really emotional one that we saw on this past week's episode on Lindsay's birthday, when they're in bed, I think it's another example of how the show is doing an excellent job of acknowledging the platform that these people have as reality stars and acknowledging the show and acknowledging just the reality of these reality stars' lives without going overboard about breaking the fourth wall. I think it's a really subtle thing here because Paige was up all night because of her feelings about her relationship for sure and sort of what she should do about it. But also, it sounds like the even bigger anxiety for her in this moment was that she was nervous about Craig seeing the scene at Rush Myers play back with Sierra, seeing the scene where she for the first time acknowledged out loud on camera publicly that she would consider breaking up with him, that it might not be endgame. That she admitted that on camera is a huge point of anxiety for her, that he's going to see that one day. And furthermore, may I add, wow, I sound like an intellectual. This is also where I see evidence that it wasn't a foregone conclusion that Paige was going to break up with Craig. Because here we have Paige worried about Craig seeing this conversation she had with Sierra playback on TV. Because she still expected to be with him this spring when it aired. The reason why she was so anxious about this is because if you talk openly about potentially wanting to break up with somebody that you're in love with and dating, the reason why you'd be so anxious about that is because there's a chance that you're going to still be together. And then he sees, like, if they're broken up, who cares if he sees that? The anxiety comes from the fact that, oh my God, we might still be together in 8 months. And then he'll see me talking about, oh my God, I was considering breaking up with you. That's a real, I understand that anxiety. That's wild. So that to me is evidence that from the critics of Paige that say that, like, you know, she always, her plan was always to break up with him, blah, 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 blah. No. Mm-mm. This to me is evidence that that was not the case. And then we hear in a confessional later in the episode that she is going to postpone the decision of what to do about her relationship until after the tour. It's too much to think about. Again, I've spoken about how I think that this is part of what played into this whole thing and sort of why it was drawn out so much. Like, this is happening in August. Why did she wait until November around Thanksgiving to break up with him? Because of the tour. It was too much happening, crowded time in her life, busy schedule. Why rush to make this huge decision if she hasn't fully processed it and thought it through? But she can't do that right now because she's focusing on the 60-day tour. I understand that. But I can also see how someone could call that sort of inadvertently selfish. like, again, I've talked about on the show how big of a deal it was and how big this decision was. So I get waiting on her side. But for his sake, from his side, it's definitely tough and it can read as stringing him along. It kind of is like by definition stringing him along. But I don't think it was with malintent or being evil. I just think it was like, again, it makes sense that she just couldn't bring herself to make that decision yet. She couldn't. What I'm interested to know more about, and maybe we'll get this on the reunion, or hopefully, I would love if Paige, when I watch what happens live after the finale, but I'm interested to know more about how they were, how much they talked, how much they saw each other in the fall during the tour. I really want to have a better sense of what their relationship was like in those few months there.
How many discounts does USAA auto insurance offer? Too many to say here. Multi-vehicle discount, safe driver discount, new vehicle discount, storage discount, legacy.
How many discounts will you stack up? Tap the banner or visit usaa.com/auto discounts. Restrictions apply.
All right, let's talk about a couple of quicker topics here. We have Mia Thornton's announcement on Monday that she is out on The Real Housewives of Potomac. I think Mia was a pretty solid housewife for a few seasons there, but then towards the end, it just became too much lying, too much phoniness, not enough authenticity. And her leaving the show kind of feels like a foregone conclusion. I think it's kind of laughable because in her statement announcing her exit from Potomac, she announces that she is also moving to Atlanta. And what did she like intensely deny on the reunion when her castmates brought it up? Oh, the fact that she lives in Atlanta. So it's like, yeah, maybe there was some sort of technicality on the wording there. Maybe she didn't officially live there yet, or maybe she still was holding on to a place in Maryland. But that's actually my theory. My theory is that this was Bravo's decision to fire her. And so part of her announcement that she is exiting the series was this, like, making a really big deal out of the fact that she is moving to Atlanta. And I think that that helps to make it seem like it was her decision. It's like, oh, of course she had to leave the show because she's moving to Atlanta for family reasons or what have you. But in my opinion, she would have just kept an apartment in Maryland if Bravo had renewed her contract. She still probably would have, like, moved part-time to Atlanta, maybe put the kids in school down there. But if Bravo renewed her contract, I think that she would have kept her apartment in Maryland, and that's why she also waited to officially announce that she was moving to Atlanta until it was official that she was off the show. That is my theory of what went down here with Mia leaving The Real Housewives of Potomac. All right, so then it came out towards the end of last week that Garcelle has unfollowed pretty much the entire cast on Real Housewives of Beverly Hills. She unfollowed Kyle, Dorit, Erica, Bose, and definitely most notably Sutton, her best friend on the show, who did not defend her on the reunion. And I think that that is why she stormed out. That's why she was so pissed. Again, I talked about that last week. But she has not unfollowed Kathy Hilton. She has not unfollowed Jennifer Tilly. And she has also not unfollowed, drumroll please, PK. Can you believe? I mean, that is just, I die at that. That is a big fuck you to Dorit. And you know what? That's a great Housewives move. And you know what? Obviously, unfollowing a lot of the cast is very dramatic. And she knew that this would get picked up and make headlines. But you know what? One, that's a Housewives move. That's a classic Housewives move, kind of doing this social media stuff to make a statement. But I also think it makes sense. I think that we've seen this before where if you leave the show, like, you kind of want a clean break from it. You kind of want to not have what they're doing on your Instagram feed, not to be reminded. You have to kind of, like, really process leaving the show and being separated from it. And I think social media is a big part of that. But what's interesting is that Sutton actually released a statement to Page Six addressing this. And she said, Garcelle has chosen to unfollow all of the housewives. I can only imagine that she needs a clean break right now. I love her and I'm giving her the space she needs. Page Six writes that she notes that Beauvais, with whom she is close friends, is still following her business accounts, the Sutton Concept and Sutton Brands. I know that she is going to move through this next chapter with grace and success. So again, I feel two ways about this Sutton statement. I think, you know, I like that she's being respectful. I like that she's trying to sort of nip this in the bud and not have it sort of spiral into something crazy that they've had this huge falling out or anything like that. But also, I think it's kind of funny to release a statement to Page Six directly about this so quickly. And I think she's trying to get ahead of more accusations that she's not sticking up for her, which is so it's a smart play. It really is. But it's also telling. And then last thing I want to talk about before we get to my quick little chat with Stassi and Lisa Vanderpump. Again, it's literally 5 minutes long, so don't get too excited. So Kenya had been teasing that she's going to launch a confessionals series on YouTube because she didn't get confessionals on this season of The Real Housewives of Atlanta before getting suspended. A couple of highlights here. You know, it's a little bit of a, I don't know. This is where she might start to lose some people, I think, because it's a little bit gratuitous. I want her to share her side of the story, but I will say, I think I would rather her have done it like with the New York Times or with, you know, a big media outlet, like a sort of a more, I don't know, something about the YouTube confessional format thing. There's nobody asking her the tougher questions. There's nobody sort of pushing back on her. So it's just like, and again, she's not obligated to have anybody do that. But I think that's why I sort of wanted her to have a sit down with Andy at some point or something like that. So it's sort of like, it's less of a one-way thing. Obviously, I think she views The Real Housewives of Atlanta this season as a one-way thing in the opposite direction from Brit, from production, from Bravo. So I understand that. So I'm not going to criticize her for doing the YouTube thing, but I actually think it would have been more effective for her at this juncture to have sat down with a media outlet versus, you know, produce her own YouTube series. Personally, that's just my thing. So some of the things that she talks about, though, she says, I haven't watched Porsha's YouTube. I mean, there's a lot of YouTube shit to follow, you guys. Nene has a YouTube now. Porsha's doing it. Candy's obviously always done it. It's a lot. But Porsha said, I guess on her YouTube channel, that she knows that a housewife gave Kenya the photos of Brit. And Kenya says that's a lie. I guess the implication was that it was Drew who gave the photos to her or this person, Ming Lee. She says that's a lie. They were on various porn sites around the internet. And that is also why she chose to share them to begin with, because she engaged a local attorney who maintained with her that what she did was not illegal. It was not revenge porn because they were readily available online. She mentioned the thing about from seasons ago with her, you know, jokingly packing a gun amid her feud with Phaedra. She says it wasn't that serious. Phaedra never saw it, etc. She also says that Brit never misinterpreted Kenya's energy. She says that it was always very calculated from Brit. She says, I think when she was interviewing for The Real Housewives of Atlanta, she wanted the villain role. She wanted to come after me. She made production promises that she was going to come after me. And then she was surprised and thrown off that I was so nice to her. I do think there is some truth in that in Brit being thrown off by Kenya not being like really mean to her. And so that's why I think we see Brit in those early episodes reacting so strongly to little pieces of shade from Kenya that were like so whatever. Because in her mind, she was so ready to pounce. She was so ready to like have a thing with Kenya. I do believe that from Kenya, because nothing we saw from Kenya ever, none of it explains Brit's big reactions and her taking such offense to Kenya's behavior. Nothing Kenya did until obviously the hair spa event. Nothing until then merited the responses that Brit was giving her. So I do believe that from Kenya. She says, I think she overpromised what she would do on the show. And for the first 3 weeks, she was exceptionally boring. And she also pointed out how Brit, and this is good to point out, Brit has been changing the story about the photos that have been shown and sort of like her involvement in porn or not. She's talked about doing webcams. At one point, she claimed that she was in high school and she was a teenager in some of the photos. And then at other points, she says that, you know, she did it when she's changing her story about when this happened and how old she was and sort of the circumstances around it. And then Kenya also talks about the fact that she went to her showrunner after the vault event. Her and Porsha stayed back, is what she says. And she says that she heard Brit say, quote, that's why I keep a pistol for bitches like you. And Kenya says this, that she heard this, but it did not make the edit. And she says that Porsha saw the look on Kenya's face. She saw how serious she was taking the comments from Brit, even though she didn't hear them. But that doesn't jibe with what we heard on the show to me, because in the show, we heard hot mic of Porsha and Kenya in the car leaving the event. And we hear Kenya telling Porsha about the gun comments, and Porsha sounds surprised. So I don't know what Kenya's talking about here, because if she had already told Porsha while talking to the EP, then why was Porsha so surprised in the car when the cameras weren't on them? It was a hot mic moment, so Porsha couldn't have been acting for the cameras. So I was kind of confused about that from her. She did show a pretty telling clip of Brit from before her time on Housewives, where she brags in an interview about bringing her pistol with her everywhere she goes. So again, that gets back to what I was talking about in a previous episode of like when Brit was on Watch Happens Live, they talked about this whole thing about there was an investigation of whether or not Brit had a gun on set. while filming the show. They were never asked whether she had guns in general, whether she had pistols in general. And it's like, her bringing up her pistols didn't necessarily mean they were with her in person to me. But if you're bringing them up and you own them, that's still a threat to me. So it sounds like she did own guns, to be honest. And I don't think Britt's been asked that directly in relation to this situation. She also refused to talk about Cynthia in her YouTube video, which I think is interesting. I'm team Cynthia in that little situation for sure. I think that Kenya is expecting blind loyalty from Cynthia, and Cynthia is her own person and doesn't need to give that. And I don't think that makes her a bad friend, personally. And then the last thing, which is a big, big claim that she makes at the end of this confessionals video, is that she was invited and then disinvited for the reunion months ago. She says, the disrespect is insane. She's not given the same grace as everybody else. She's being erased from the history of the show. Again, I don't think any of that is true. I don't think she's being erased from the history of the show. I don't think anybody's going to deny the impact that Kenya Moore has had on the Real Housewives of Atlanta. And I think that she does deserve more grace and respect. But I don't think she's being erased from the history of the show. And she says that Kim Zolciak got a whole show when she left. But Kim Zolciak left under very different circumstances. And again, I know the point she's trying to make, and I don't disagree with the fact that Kenya has been treated differently than perhaps other people. But there's nothing that is sort of a one-to-one comparison with this situation that Kenya created for herself and any other thing that she brought up in this video. So I think it's hard to make the direct comparisons. I really do. But I do think that like there is different treatment for sure. But I don't think there's direct comparison to sort of highlight that completely. So yeah, she sort of ends by saying, I don't anticipate an invitation to the reunion. I don't see that. So I think, you know, all signs keep pointing to Kenya being done on the Real Housewives of Atlanta, which I think is really disappointing, really sad. And I hope that's not true. I hope there's some sort of path forward at some point in the future, but I don't anticipate it being at the end of this season for the reunion. I think more time has to pass for that to be able to happen. And I think that Kenya has to probably be pretty careful about how she continues to talk about it publicly, because as we saw with Nene, the more you sort of come after the network and Andy, and she's every right to do that if that's what her prerogative is, but that will further jeopardize her chances of coming back to the show. So yeah, that is all for today, but keep listening for my quick little chat with Stassi Schroeder and Lisa Vanderpump ahead of the season 2 premiere of Vanderpump Villa this coming Thursday, April 24th. I think all 10 episodes are going to be available on Thursday. So that's a good thing to binge. Reminder that the Secret Lives of Mormon Wives cast is going to be on a couple of the episodes as guests at the villa, which is now in Italy this season. I watched the first episode of the show. I think Stassi brings a really welcome sort of added layer of star power, of authority in the show. And Bo is there. The kids are there. So there's a nice other element, I think, in this second season of Vanderpump Villa. The first season was not my favorite, but I really think they've leveled up in the second season, and I'm excited to watch more episodes, and especially to see The Secret Lives of Mormon Wives. And I really do think that it's nice to have Stassi Schroeder back on TV. I think that she belongs in reality television. I think she's an amazing reality star. I mean, even in this first episode that I watched, you're reminded that she's great at her job. She is. She knows how this works. She's good at it. And you know, I think she's done her time. I do, personally. Maybe that's controversial, but Kristen Doty's been back on television for going on 2 seasons now. So I think I think Stassi has every right to be back on reality TV, and she's not even back on Bravo. So yeah, keep listening for my quick little chat with Stassi and Lisa. Check out Vanderpump Villa season 2 on Hulu on Thursday, April 24th. And please make sure to rate, review, and subscribe to Gabbing with Gib wherever you're listening to this right now. We'll be back a couple more times this week. I want to gab. Hi, Lisa and Stassi. How are you?
Hello.
Hi.
Good.
Great to see you. I'm great. It's great to get some time with both of you, even if it's just 5 minutes. I just watched the premiere this morning and it's great. And Stassi, I have to start with you because it feels very natural having you back in this environment. It really, really does. And you mentioned in the premiere that, you know, you took some years off of reality TV. And I'm curious if there was a point where you thought this would never happen, if you thought you'd never return to this medium.
No, I think this is okay. Just like part of who I am. Like, it feels very comfortable. And especially like this show, Vanderpump Villa, like having Lisa there, it being in Italy, a 12th century castle, my family gets to come. It was just like, nothing has ever felt more natural to me. Like, that's the life that I was just born to live, you know?
Castle. It's a pretty good gig. It's a right? pretty good gig, I have to say. Yeah, yeah. So, Lisa, was there anything that you said that to sort of convince Stassi to do this with you? Or
I had like 5 words came out of my, do you want to come to Italy? And castle. Suddenly she was there. Yeah. And so like, she was like, yes. And I was like, well, hold on a second.
No more.
Yeah. So yes. It was just the perfect fit, really. It was somebody that I could play with. I mean, I love each and every one of them, really, the history I have working for me, especially on Vanderpump Rules. But yeah, I thought this would be really exciting. And also I knew Stassi wanted to live in Italy and she got married in Italy. So I thought she'd enjoy the whole experience. But now 100%. She wants to come wherever I go in the world.
She'll never leave your side.
She's like, yeah. I'm in. I'm like, okay, easy now.
And Stassi, we hear you talk in the premiere also about like how you spent so much time in this medium, like wanting to live up to Lisa's expectations of you and to sort of fulfill those sort of visions for you. Do we see you unlock a different dynamic between you guys this season, or does that continue? Yeah.
I think that will always be there. I mean, okay. I started working for Lisa when I was 21. So like, that's like the majority of my adult life. So I will always want her to be proud of me in a way, or, you know, I want to impress her. I don't think that's ever going to go away. But this whole Vanderpump Villa was so different.
Hold on a second. I said this before, but the term working for me, we use that term loosely. And I didn't ever see her trying to impress me when she worked at Sir. Listen. Do you remember any times that she was trying to impress me?
I took a few orders.
I don't know. I think when you said that you wanted the Pinot Grigio, I think that was an impressive, like, you know, you were staking your foot in the ground. And I think that was pretty good, you know.
It wasn't working for me then.
Oh, my gosh.
I know.
Yeah. See, here we are still. No, Vanderpump, but being in Italy with Lisa, it was more like we got to be buddies.
Yeah, it was a lot.
So and it does sound like you sort of unlocked something new for both of you.
Yeah, no, 100%. And having my kids there with her and all of that, it was just a different, fully a different dynamic.
Also, mm-hmm. coming into a reality show where you're not working there, I think was very liberating for you.
It was a dream.
Yeah.
Are you like, that was a dream to be able to just like come in and be.
And be a little April bossy. And be a little bossy too, which is nice. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Because it's nice because it's like, Lisa, obviously last season you were the queen of the castle and you still are the queen of the castle. But now there's this new level, I think, in this hierarchy in this show.
There's a duchess in the castle.
There we go. A duchess.
A duchess. Princess.
I was about to say, do we like that label for Stassi? We like the princess or duchess? Okay.
Duchess is a little too, she has to work a little harder to be a duchess, darling. You're a prince.
True.
A petulant princess.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
And I noticed sort of a through line in this second season, this first episode that I've seen is like, Lisa, I know that you have spoken forever about how you really believe in second chances for people. And it's between Stassi coming onto the show or you bringing back Marciano and Hannah and some other people from the staff from the first season. You never write people off. And I think that's a really admirable quality. And I'm curious if you could just speak to that and how that sort of manifests in the show this season.
Look, I think if everybody, especially people that are judging people on reality television, are so harsh when they talk about mistakes that are made when they're younger, if they all look back on their youth, I think, you know, there would be a lot of criticism about them as well. I know myself, and I was pretty exemplary. I got married at 21, but I can't say I'd never made mistakes. And I think that it's more interesting to see people falter. They then learn from their mistakes. That's the most important thing in life is growth. Even now, I'm still learning from mistakes and thinking, okay, what did I do wrong with that? And how can I make that better? Just to fire somebody or let them go, and people, when they're invested in somebody's journey, I want to see that. I want to see them come out the other side. But it was a sign of the times, you know?
Yeah, for sure. Well, I think that, again, Stassi, I think watching you on this show, it feels really welcome and really like natural, as I said. And I'm really happy to have you back on our screens. And I hope you feel that love from people either today and just as the show premieres, because
thank you.
You deserve it. Yeah.
Thank you so much. I appreciate that.
I like that. Course. Yeah. I like that.
Yeah. Sweet. Yeah. Well, Stassi and Lisa, I wish I had an hour with you, but I only have 5 minutes.
Do.
That's the rest of our time. I'm getting kicked out, but thanks so much.
Thank
and congrats
you.
On season two. Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to the show. Subscribe to Gabbing with Gabe on any podcast platform to listen to new episodes, and subscribe to Gabbing with Gabe on YouTube to watch full-length versions of our interviews. We'd also love your support with a 5-star review on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. You can follow me at Gabe Sonoma on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok, and keep up with all things Gabbing with Gabe at Gabbing with Gabe on Instagram and TikTok. Gabbing with Gabe is an independent podcast hosted by me, Gibson Johns. It's produced by myself and Riley Dabbs. Graphics are by Rachel Roth, and our cover art photography is by Troy Hallahan. If you want to reach out about guest booking, sponsorship, or advertising opportunities, email us at gabbingwithgib@gmail.com. Thank you again for your support, and see you next time.